Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You can't order as much food these days in Lower Manhattan, which is where our CBS Sports Radio headquarters are located. However, we can talk about food all we want, and that is our question on this hump show. Your top three must-haves at the Thanksgiving table, and we're asking you to rank them. Rank them! So on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence, and then our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. I've got Thanksgiving on my mind, and I can't stop thinking about it. I'm really excited. We're just over a week away. Your top three must-haves at the Thanksgiving table. And while you're on our social media, we still need your questions for Ask Amy Anything, which happens just over a half hour from now on The Hump Show. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Do you want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. We are hours away from the NBA draft, so this would make NBA draft eve, if you will. We don't know a whole lot. It's obviously unconventional, not normally when we have the NBA draft, but Minnesota is set to choose number one overall, barring any trades. Golden State, weirdly enough, made three of the last six NBA finals, but is choosing number two. Charlotte, number three. And then you kind of look at the various ways that trades can be made, and you know you should expect chaos all the time. LaMelo Ball may not be the overwhelming consensus number one pick, but there are a lot of people that believe he will end up being the top player selected. He skipped college ball to play overseas in Lithuania and Australia, and he says he's born for this, that this is his destiny. This is something he's been preparing for his whole life, and because of that, he says so far no nerves for him either.
I'm not gonna lie, I feel like another day right now because I'm doing my same stuff, so. Yeah, I'm not really, I'm looking forward to it. So definitely been working for it, but I know it's way more after that.
19 years old would be, of course, the second Ball brother to play in the NBA behind Lonzo. And he has done workouts virtually for the Timberwolves, the Warriors, the Hornets, the Pistons. He says the Knicks have also talked to him on the phone. So there's a lot of interest, of course. And all of this is being done without having in-person contact. Crazy, right? It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Right now, we're pleased to welcome Michael Vandegaard, who has spent nearly 20 years in the NBA as a scout, now consulting with various NBA teams, and has also coached at the D1 level. And in addition, he is part owner of a venture called CoachTube.com. It's a platform online where various coaches from every level of every sport can do virtual clinics and can share instruction with potential athletes or even other coaches. CoachTube.com. So Michael Vandegaard, we're pleased to have you here on the show. How challenging is this process, evaluating young men who want to make the jump from college or from European leagues to the NBA?
Well, it's definitely challenging when you can't put your eyes on the prospects as much as you've been used to. You know, the COVID came through about March last year. So, you know, for the most part, you got to see them live, you know, in their habitat. But you always like to have meetings and have them, you know, in your facility and talk to them one-on-one. And then, you know, get a chance to watch them in workouts outside of their team element. And that's something that teams haven't been able to do much this year. And that's really, really difficult to get a grasp of these kids. But on the flip side, I've said this before, you know, every team's in the same boat. So as long as every team's in the same boat and they haven't had a chance really to, you know, have these guys at their facilities, you know, and see them outside of their element playing 5-on-5, you know, at least they're all in the same boat. And so they have all the same information going forward.
How much concern is there about these young men being able to stay in shape without the same access to facilities or the same type of practices and system that maybe they've had in previous seasons?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a big issue going forward. You know, a lot of times they have the summer league to prepare and they have a few months to get prepared for the NBA grind that's ahead of them. You know, they're going to turn this around here in a couple weeks, and these kids definitely aren't in game shape. So that's going to be something that teams really rely heavily on, you know, with their training staff and the people that take care of their bodies. So, you know, the players just need to do the best they can, and it'll probably be a slow process. You know, a lot of these guys might not be playing as many minutes as they normally would at the start of the season, at the beginning of this year, just because, you know, that's a process that takes time.
When you do see these tapes or virtual workouts, whatever tools that you're using to evaluate, what are you looking for to know if a player is ready to make that jump to the NBA?
Well, it obviously starts with, you know, the size and the athleticism and the body the person has. You know, once you take that all into account, then you got to evaluate their skill level. You know, how talented are they? You know, can they shoot the ball? Can they handle it? Can they pass? But it really starts with the size and athleticism. I don't think people really realize how big and strong and athletic these kids are, you know, when you watch them on video. When you see these NBA players in person, they are huge human beings. And it's really amazing. You know, I'm a 6'7 guy, played professional basketball in college, and I'm amazed at how big and athletic these guys are on a daily basis. And it always starts from there. And after that, like I said, you evaluate their skill set and try to predict if they're going to be, you know, a solid NBA player for your franchise.
I suppose the old adage is true. You can't teach size.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we drafted Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, and those men are absolutely huge human beings. And you just don't get that understanding of how large these players are and how athletic they are, you know, by watching it on video. You know, you see guys dunk the basketball, and it's just kind of a normal thing on SportsCenter highlights or, you know, the nightly news. But you see that live and in person, and your jaw can just drop. And I've been doing it 25 years of my life, and my jaw still drops sometimes.
When he says we, Michael Vandegaard refers to the Philadelphia 76ers. He was an NBA scout with them for nearly 20 years and has also coached at the Division I level and consulted with some NBA teams as this draft, this atypical unconventional draft approaches. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. It's funny, one of the things you hear a lot is, I see the potential there. So you're talking about trying to evaluate talent and predict whether or not that's going to translate in your years doing this. What are a few things that you look for that may indicate that player can actually take his skills and be coachable and that those will translate at the pro game?
Yeah, like I mentioned before, I think a lot of it starts with just the size and the athleticism of the player. You know, you look for that, especially on the defensive end. You look for their end, you know, intensity. You look for their consistent effort on that end. And once you can evaluate that they're, you know, hey, they're going to be slotted as a point guard or small forward or power forward because of their size and athleticism, then you evaluate their talent. And today's game, it really revolves around the ability to shoot the basketball. You know, how well does he shoot it? You know, can he handle it and pass it? Mm. Can he be a team player and fit our system that we're trying to run here with our franchise? So it's a lot of things that go into it. But like I said, it always starts with the size and athleticism, and then you evaluate the skill set going forward. And then you also take into account the age of the player. You know, you can handle some warts and handle some things that maybe they're not perfect at if they're 19 years old. You know, you look at an Obi Toppin, and he's much more of a developed player and an all-around player, but he's also 22 or 23. So you have to take that into account. And I always say the younger kids have more upside, and people always wonder, like, hey, why are you always drafting all these 19-year-old kids? Well, in 3 or 4 years, you fix a few flaws, and they turn out to be a much better player down the road.
How much does it matter their attitude, their behavior? Maybe if there was, I don't know, an incident in their past. I mean, how far do you think a team should be willing to go when it comes to a young man who maybe has some questionable personality characteristics or behavioral traits?
Well, that's always a conundrum for everybody in the NBA front offices. You know, talent always trumps anything. You can get away with a lot more shenanigans, you know, on the sidelines if you're awfully talented.
Sure.
But with that said, you know, the NBA player has really, really, I think, blossomed in the last 20 years since I've been doing this. I think there were a lot more, I would say, quote, knuckleheads 20 years ago than there are today. You go back and you do intel on these players, and it's just amazing what quality of kids are coming into the NBA in today's day and age. And then you look for, you know, their work ethic, what their coaches say, what their teachers say. You know, that background intel is a big part of, hey, do we think he's going to fully develop to his ultimate potential? People talk all the time about his upside. Well, you just need to know, is he going to reach that upside?
Right.
Or is he going to give me the effort to reach that upside? And so that's really where it comes down to, you know, the background and the intel and maybe some of the issues they've had, and can they overcome those?
Mm. You mentioned that you played pro ball and obviously also in college and then coaching too. What do you think is the biggest challenge, maybe the biggest hurdle for a young man when he makes that jump from college ball to the NBA?
You know, I think the speed of the game, you know, the 24-second shot clock, the size and athleticism and the speed of the game just gets amped up every time you take that step, whether it's from high school to college or whether it becomes college to the NBA. I think they're really, you know, bright-eyed and they're shocked a little bit when they first get there about how fast the game is played. And sometimes, you know, I talk to fans or I talk to people in the stands or friends, and they talk about, you know, it doesn't look like these guys are trying. You know, it's amazing the ability of these guys and the athleticism and the fact that they can, you know, do these things at their size and the intensity going on when it doesn't look like there's intensity. So, you know, it's just an awesome feeling to be in the stands and watching these guys play.
I know it doesn't matter maybe as much this year because of the cancellation of March Madness and not having that big stage, but also just to all of the challenges of an off season that was relatively limited. But how much does it matter? How much do you put stock into going to a college where you know they generate a lot of pro talent and you know the coaches understand the type of talent it takes to succeed at the next level?
Yeah, I think you definitely look for the blue blood programs, you know, to start with their talent and how good those guys are. But there's been so many players the last few years that have come from smaller programs and that have been drafted in the top 10 and turned out to be, you know, amazing players. You look at Ja Morant, you know, the second pick in last year's draft.
Right.
Now he's, you know, become an amazing player. You go a couple years further back, you look at Damian Lillard, you know, and the amazing things he's done in the league. And then you even go to one of the best players in the NBA today currently, Steph Curry. So you can go back and find these guys. And I don't know if it necessarily, you know, means anything special to be from a blue blood school or not, but you just need to find that talent wherever it may be. And as we all know, the international game is just growing and growing. And
right.
You look at Luka Doncic and the success that he's had, and, you know, with saying some of these smaller schools and international guys, there's probably two or three international guys in the lottery, and there's a smaller kid, Obi Toppin from Dayton, you know, who's going to probably be in the top five or six. So you're just trying to find talent wherever it may be.
Michael Vandegaard served as an NBA scout for 18 years with the Sixers. He's coached at the D1 level and is also doing some consulting as we get ready for the draft coming up on Wednesday night. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. It's funny because Damian Lillard was the name that I was thinking of as I was asking that question. And also you bring up the European talent or talent from overseas. Certainly there's a difference in the way that many of those young men come over to the United States and are prepared versus maybe some domestic talent. What do you see as the major differences between a European player and one that is homegrown?
You know, it's interesting. Those European players are professionals, you know, when they get to middle school for the most part, and all the way through high school, they're professionals. You know, they're getting paid. They're doing it countless hours a day where the kids, you know, here aren't really doing that. I think the biggest hurdle for international players is the athleticism. You know, they haven't seen that athleticism on a daily basis like most of these Americans have. So if the international players can adjust to that athleticism and size standpoint for the American player, then they're going to have great success. You know, the American kids have grown up and seen it all along the way, and it's not as big a transition for them.
Got it. So then as we get ready for this draft, who you've mentioned Obi a couple of times, but who are some players that have caught your eye that you think will be successes or at least have the potential to succeed in the NBA?
Well, obviously, you always look at the top of the draft. I think it's pretty much a consensus that Anthony Edwards, LaMelo Ball, James Wiseman are probably the three top picks. I think you can go in multiple different orders. I'd be a little bit surprised if James Wiseman is the number one pick, but, you know, those three guys is probably where you start. You know, and then you go to an older player like Obi Toppin, who's going to be drafted in the top four or five. You look at some of the international guys, Denny Avia, you know, from Maccabi Tel Aviv. He's a really interesting prospect, and he'll go in the top five as well. And then I think there's a guy that not many people have talked about, a kid named Patrick Williams. He's out of Florida State. He's a 6'8 freshman. He actually didn't play but about 20, 22 minutes, and he is a heck of a talent. You know, will he maximize that talent like we talked about, and how much better can he get? And he's by far one of the youngest players in the draft. I think he just turned 19 in August. Mm. So, you know, he's a guy to keep your eyes on, and it wouldn't surprise me if somebody like the Chicago Bulls maybe take him at pick number four, quite a few picks higher than most people are picking.
This is a lot of work, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears for scouts, for people who work in your area of the business. So is draft night like Christmas for you?
Oh, man, it's the greatest thing in the world. I'll tell you what, the excitement is everywhere. You know, you work your butt off for 365 days a year, and you really, as a scout, only have that one day of payoff. So it's exactly like Christmas. That's a great, great analogy. I love it.
How far ahead do you work as a scout, Michael? I mean, are you already looking at kids that are in high school?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I've been really trying to study for the last few years is the high school groups and, you know, studying these kids that are incoming freshmen, studying actually the seniors in high school and the juniors and all the way down to the sophomores. I've started to scout the sophomores in high school this next year. So that's the 2023 possible draft class if they would change the age limit from straight out of high school. Otherwise, you know, they'd be in the draft in 2024. So that's what I've been spending my last 2 years doing and really helping NBA teams and doing a scouting service and consulting for them on the high school kids primarily.
How do you get tape or how do you have access to any type of film on kids that young?
You know what? It's pretty amazing today. Now they have so much technology that everybody's taping their games and everybody's putting them all over the internet on multiple platforms. But on the flip side, there's high school tournaments all over the country. You know, last year I went to 7 or 8 high school tournaments, and at those tournaments you get to see, you know, multiple kids on multiple, you know, high level teams like Montverde and IMG. And a bunch of NBA players have come from those programs, so you can go to a one-stop shop and see 8 teams in a weekend. I'm actually supposed to be going to Dallas this weekend for a tournament that's got Imani Bates, you know, and LeBron James' son, Bronny James, and some of the highest-level talent here in Texas. I live in Austin, Texas, and we're actually still playing basketball, so I'm looking forward to go see that tournament this weekend.
Oh, that sounds like so much fun just to see people competing, considering all of the challenges. Michael Vandegaard spent 18 years with the Philadelphia 76ers as a scout and is doing some consulting as Christmas approaches for the scouting community. It is really good to talk to you. Thank you so much for answering all of my questions.
Yes, it was great. It was great. And I can't wait to open our presents tomorrow and see what teams that we're following and who we get for our draft night pick.
It is. It's like Christmas. And don't forget to check out CoachTube. It's essentially a YouTube for coaches. Michael, a big part of this venture, and it features everything from the highest level of college basketball coaches to NBA coaches, Billy Donovan, Tom Izzo, and others, all the way down to high school coaches who maybe want to teach a particular skill. So it's accessible for not just coaches who want to expand their repertoire and maybe teach a new skill to their teams. And you can certainly see these demonstrations that are taught by some of the best, or it's for athletes themselves who want to go and maybe learn in their own time and develop a skill where they're lacking. And it's every sport. So it's not just basketball, it's lacrosse, it's football, and it's open and available at every level. So really cool venture that's grown by leaps and bounds. CoachTube.com and Michael Vandegaard, an awesome guest. Man, the geek in me, the nerd in me, just really enjoyed asking him questions about this process and what he's looking for. And the fact that he starts evaluating talent when they're in middle school, whoa. I mean, that is, wow, that's a lot to keep straight. And he's right, though. Everything's on the internet, and it never goes away. So now you can have tape, and you've got parents who are putting tape of their kids up on the web when they're still wee babies in their basketball careers. All right, you can find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS, also on our Facebook page. We need your questions for Ask Amy Anything. Still ahead, the idea of Chris Paul in Phoenix, also the Bucks getting Drew Holiday. These are two major moves that we've seen in NBA free agency. Mike Tomlin, he is so fascinating to listen to, even when there's not a whole lot to say with the undefeated Steelers. And also Jamal Adams. I try to listen to him with a straight face, but what really happens is I involuntarily roll my eyes. So we got a lot of territory still to cover. Your must-haves at Thanksgiving, and then your questions for Ask Amy Anything, which is about 15 minutes from now.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
I respect his opinion and his words. Those aren't mine. Please don't put words in my mouth or we're going to have a problem. And Carson's our guy. Bottom line, end of story. Carson's our guy. Carson's our draft pick. Carson's the guy that is going to carry us and lead this football team. And listen, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. Those aren't my words. Those aren't Howie's words, Jeffrey's words. Those are his words. I mean, I respect that opinion. Whatever he wants to say, that's fine, and we're going to remain friends. It doesn't bother me one way or the other.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
A relatively passionate response from Philadelphia Eagles head coach Doug Peterson after his longtime friend Brett Favre made comments about the Eagles choosing incorrectly. So essentially going with Carson Wentz over Nick Foles, considering how accomplished Foles had been when Carson Wentz was injured. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. That was last week. And we're now seeing the kind of back and forth. So first it was Brett more than once. Then it was Doug Peterson. Now it's Brett Favre again on his weekly appearance on Sirius XM NFL Radio.
Doug and I don't have a problem with each other. It is my opinion. It's not his. What he said is certainly, I don't disagree with him. If I were him, I would have said the same things. They chose Carson Wentz. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that based on that year, how Nick played, not just because he won the Super Bowl as a starting quarterback, but how he led that team. And I, there's no question to me that the guys like Carson Wentz. There's no question to me that he has the potential to be that type of player, meaning capable of leading a team to a Super Bowl. Will it be Philly? I don't know. Right now, Doug and the organization is committed to him. And it was just my opinion that strictly based on how Nick played and the results, I would have stuck with him. Not knocking Carson at all.
Well, maybe not directly, but certainly indirectly. Certainly guilty by association there. And I appreciate that Brett is saying he and Doug don't have a problem. Okay, well, that may be the case long run down the road. It's such a small thing.
We're going to remain friends.
But at the same time, there's no way, let's just say it's me and I'm in his, that I'm not a little bit irritated with the fact that he keeps hammering this point home and the fact that now Doug Peterson has to respond to it because Brett Favre keeps bringing it up.
We're going to have a problem.
Obviously, the Eagles made the choice to stick with Carson because Carson's their guy and Carson's their draft pick and Carson was their investment. And obviously, 2 years in a row, it was Nick Foles that not only stepped in almost seamlessly, not quite, but almost, but it ultimately led them to first a Super Bowl and then the postseason as well as a playoff victory. So there's a lot of debate about whether or not the Eagles made the right choice. And it certainly doesn't seem so right now, though you look at what Nick Foles is doing with Chicago and it's not as though he's turning into an MVP up there. So I don't know. It was certainly
Carson's our guy. Carson's our draft pick.
It was lightning in a bottle. Maybe Nick Foles will never have that same level of success that he enjoyed at Philadelphia. And it happened over multiple seasons. Maybe it would have been different if he had stuck there. At the same time, you can't go back now. So if I'm Doug Peterson, I'm probably a little annoyed because there's absolutely no way that I can go back and change the decision that was made. So why are we revisiting it? This is revisionist history.
Please don't put words in my mouth or we're going to have a problem. Bottom line, end of story.
I mean, they're not sitting down for mashed potatoes and gravy or pumpkin pie. I'll just tell you that right now. So I do think it's interesting that they're going back and forth. But if I'm coach, I'm annoyed just because I have to keep answering these damn questions. All right, you got a couple of minutes left to send your questions for, I don't mind answering yours, your questions for Ask Amy Anything. So on our Facebook page or on show Twitter, After Hours CBS. And then we're also going to continue to take your submissions for top three must-haves on your Thanksgiving table. I'm actually seeing some really interesting, intriguing options, like this one from Mark, who says canned cranberry sauce. Not homemade. He has to have canned cranberry sauce. I mean, when I see that, I think the difference between fresh beets and canned beets and how they're two completely different foods, actually.
Stings the nostrils.
Yeah, no way would I eat. It's not that I don't eat canned anything, but I would never prefer canned over the fresh. Rashad on Facebook, mac and cheese is a must. And he adds a couple of T's on the end. I've never had mac and cheese at Thanksgiving, but that makes me want some. Bill, my mother's sausage stuffing, my aunt's baked beans and pumpkin pie. I hope he doesn't store by the pumpkin pie if you need one. I make a mean pumpkin pie. Let's see, Fred on Facebook, collard greens, smoked turkey, and stuffing. I do love butternut squash, and Bob mentions butternut squash as one of his must-haves. Here's Kevin, mashed potatoes, chocolate cream pie, and cheesecake. So of his three, two of them are desserts. John is a spiral honey guy. I mean, I'm sorry, a spiral honey ham guy, duh. Man, that changes when you leave out one word, doesn't it? A spiral honey ham guy and mince pie. I've heard of it, but I will admit that I do not know what is in a mince pie. Tammy says cornbread dressing, sweet potatoes, and yeast rolls. Yeah, I'm from Texas, and that's how we roll. I like it. See, some of you are going off the beaten turkey path, and you're coming up with something completely different, which I love. Some of you are not having Thanksgiving without the alcohol. That seems to be another minor theme that's developing. So either on Twitter or Facebook, I love talking about Thanksgiving tables and Thanksgiving foods. And then your questions for Ask Amy Anything, which is straight ahead.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Time to ask Amy anything. Sort of.
Hit me with your best shot. Fire away.
Before producer Dave starts fielding, or I should say, I start fielding your questions before he starts asking your questions. Hello, McFly. I want to say thank you again, all of your birthday messages for Penny. I tried to tell her over and over it was her birthday on Tuesday. I don't think she got it, but she did enjoy the extra treats, and she loves car rides, and the cold weather makes her happy and gives her a little extra energy. So she's good. She's very healthy. She survived what was an extremely emotional and difficult year for her, from losing our cat that we had for forever, to moving and getting used to a new space, to the heat, the thunder, the fireworks, also getting her teeth cleaned and having six teeth pulled, to, you know, an incident of a weekend where she could barely walk because of some inflamed muscles. I mean, the poor dog. It's been all kinds of traumatic this year, but she survived. She's good. She's 11, and she's my furry love. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Now, if you haven't seen her pictures, they're up on Twitter or on Facebook. I posted a couple of sweet pictures. So now, producer Dave, you may ask the questions. Lob them up like softballs, and I will knock them out of the park.
I will do my best. Just going to point out that the printer decided it was a good time to not print. So
sweet.
I'm going to swivel from computer to board to microphone.
All right, I'm going to eat yogurt. Okay, go.
Enjoy. We'll start with a food question, as always. Tony wants to know, besides the usual stuff, as he calls it, the apple pie, the pumpkin pie, what's your favorite kind of weird or unique kind of pie or cake?
It's not just for Thanksgiving. Weird. I mean, coconut cream is my all-time favorite pie. It's not weird by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly it's a little bit off the beaten path. I once did a kind of a contest. I once asked people to name my favorite pie, and the contest went on for over a week. People could not figure out my favorite pie. So I think it's not as common, but coconut cream is my all-time favorite. My grandmother, my maternal grandmother, used to make one for me. And so it was always my favorite at Christmas or birthdays. And I've actually tried a couple of times. In fact, just last Friday, I tried a new recipe for a coconut cream pie that has a chocolate layer over the graham cracker crust. It turned out really good. It's hard to bring pie into work, though, so I haven't brought it in to share. I plan on eating the entire pie myself. No, I don't. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but it's a lot of pie. It's just, it's really good. I want to try it. So coconut cream, and then other kind of non-traditional, I fell in love with the s'mores blizzard at Dairy Queen this summer. Oy, it was enough to make me want to run 5 miles just so I could have a s'mores blizzard at Dairy Queen.
Well, that's a perfect transition to our next question. Megan wants to know if you could participate in any marathon tomorrow, apparently. Which one would you run in between Boston, New York City, or that Disney one you talked about?
Well, the Disney one that we weren't able to participate in this spring in April was actually a half marathon. I would die if I tried to run a marathon right now. I probably would do better with a half. I don't think I'm fully stretched out and fully trained. At this point, I could probably do 9 or 10 miles without really starting to hurt. And so I'm not completely trained, but I'm so sad that I didn't have the opportunity to go through that because I'm a Star Wars buff. My friend and I had a big plan to stay near Disney and to participate, and we were going to dress up and everything else. And I don't know if they're going to have it this spring. We didn't sign up because she's not as comfortable. So I am looking for a half marathon to run, and there are a couple, at least at this point, that are still scheduled in New York City in spring of 2021. I don't know that they're going to take place. But yeah, I don't think I should sign up for something like Boston or New York when I've never run more than 13 miles in my life. So 26 miles is a little bit outside of this old body's ability, but I absolutely will be signed up to run a half marathon the second that they are available again, because I've missed them and it gives me a good training goal.
Well, running marathons should be outside of everyone's body at any age.
I mean, I admire those people. I don't have time to train, though.
It's incredible.
For heaven's sakes, I don't have time to train for it. Right now, I only have 45 minutes of daylight by the time I wake up. So it's harder to train when you get later in the year.
Yeah, no thanks. So Mark asks a good question. So we agree that Thanksgiving, our favorite meal of the year, just about everything on the table is fantastic. But if you had to eliminate something from your Thanksgiving menu, what are you getting rid of?
Well, I don't like cranberry sauce, so that one's easy for me. My brother actually, and he got this from my grandmother, they make a mean homemade cranberry sauce. It's really good. It's got orange in it. I mean, it's awesome. Orange and apple, actually. So it's more flavorful than something that that you would get out of a can or that might be just straight cranberry sauce. So I'll eat a little bit of that. But if I had to, I would eliminate cranberry sauce. I'm trying to think what else I would eliminate. My mother said to me, so I asked her this question, what are your top three must-haves at Thanksgiving? She said mashed potatoes and gravy, stuffing, and salad. And I was like, salad? You could have salad at any other time of the year. She said, I know, but I love salad. I was like, well, have salad the next day. Anyway, I would eliminate the salad and probably the corn. A lot of people have corn or cream corn. I can do without the corn. So those would be the two that I would get rid of, the cranberry sauce and the corn. Maybe the green beans, too. I don't necessarily need a green vegetable on my Thanksgiving table.
So moving on to John. John says that his son is 12 years old. He is a huge fan of yours and of the show.
Yay.
John says, unfortunately, though, his son has cancer, and he really wanted to ask you a question.
Okay.
His son really wants to know, who is your all-time favorite NFL broadcaster or announcer?
Oh my gosh, this is really difficult. There are so many good ones. Well, we'll start with Kevin Harlan. Kevin Harlan is phenomenal, and I would listen to Kevin Harlan read a phone book. He's been on the show a bunch of times. We love Kevin here on the show. I think Wayne Larrabee with the Packers does a fantastic job. We also love Paul Allen here. I mean, if you go all the way through the NFC North, the guys who do play-by-play on the radio are the best. Dan Miller in Detroit is awesome, too. And then you think about Chicago and Jeff Joniak. So those are some of my personal favorites, but it's not really fair for me to just name one or two. Ian Eagle does an awesome job, too, when it comes to TV and to radio. Gosh, I'm trying to think of some other ones that I think are really good. I love Dave Pasch in Arizona. We just got to hear a really cool call of his, the Hail Mary, at the end of the game against Buffalo. And Jim Donovan in Cleveland. Stop me if I've named every single team in the NFL. So if I didn't name your team's play-by-play announcer, please don't get angry. I mean, I love Brad Sham in Dallas. I'm a radio junkie, so I listen to these guys all the time. So, John, please tell your son thank you and that we're pulling for him, that we're thinking of him, and that I appreciate that he listens to the show, and I hope that we can keep him company on some of his days when he's really going through it.
So we'll move on to Brian. He wants to know, what was your favorite childhood toy or game or even board game when you were
a kid? Okay. Well, when I was a kid, it was probably too early for Trivial Pursuit. By the time I got to like teenage years and college, I loved Trivial Pursuit. As a kid, though, my brother and I used to set up our entire basement in our log cabin in New Hampshire as a Star Wars universe. So we played with Star Wars figurines. We played with the ships. We had the villains. We had the heroes. So we loved to play Star Wars. I also am a huge fan of horses. It's my dream. I would rather have a horse farm than have a really nice car. Well, and by farm, I mean one or two horses. So it's my dream to be a horse owner someday when I retire. So I was constantly playing with horse figurines too, and pretending that I was a rancher or someone who raised horses. And I played with them so much that I would typically break off their legs, and then I would go to my mom and ask her to glue them back together. Gosh, I wonder where those are. I love those horse figurines and strawberry shortcakes. Those were other toys that I played with a lot when I was a kid. So I love the Purple Pie Man. Just it, for those of you who have kids, they, you know, strawberry shortcakes, if those are familiar with to you. And then I played a lot of sports, too. So we always had a lot of basketballs. We always had a softball, baseball, gloves everywhere, too. So it was a good mixture of being a girly girl and being a tomboy.
Yeah, I had baseballs, basketballs, you name it. It was everywhere. My son likes that, but he is attached to his dinosaurs. Dinosaur everything. He went to sleep with them before I came into work. He's just, they're everywhere.
By the way, I knew this was going to happen. I don't mention every single NFL announcer, and now I'm getting tweets. I'm sorry I didn't mention all 32 teams. They're all really good. They're the best of the best. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the NFL. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, you can't please everybody.
No.
So Jennifer wants to know, do you decorate the outside of your house for holidays in general? Every holiday or how
the
do you
outside?
Do that? Yeah.
Heck no. I decorate the inside because I want to see it. My goodness, my neighborhood always looks like the holiday threw up. So like Santa threw up, a jack-o'-lantern threw up. at Thanksgiving. It's like a turkey threw up. And I don't know what it is, but people are already decorating for Christmas in my neighborhood. I think maybe they're needing something to make them happy, some holiday cheer, which I understand. But no, I'm the weird one who puts lights inside, around the inside of my windows and around the inside of my door, even in my bedroom, because I love Christmas lights. They make me happy. And I've already decided where I'm putting my Christmas tree, a balsam fir, my first Christmas tree in my new house. So, no, unfortunately, I don't want to be falling off a roof. I haven't used the ladder that came with my house yet. I do not decorate the outside. I decorate inside.
Yeah, I went to walk my dog yesterday, and my neighbor across the street was already up on. He was the first one up and down the street. Was already up on the ladder. I was like, what are you doing? Are you fixing the gutter? And he's like, no, decorating for Christmas.
I'm a klutz. It's not a good idea for me to be on a ladder on a roof.
Neither is decorating for Christmas in November, whatever yesterday was.
17th, my dog's birthday.
This is true. My apologies. Chuck wants to know, what's your favorite Thanksgiving leftover?
Oh, the turkey. Oh, my gosh, the turkey. You can put it in salads. You can put it in soup. You can make sandwiches upon sandwiches upon sandwiches. So I always end up having to make extra gravy to go along with the leftovers. But, yeah, if I could only have one leftover, it would be the turkey. It's healthy for you. Oh, and when you have a good cooked turkey, it's actually, I dare say, this may be sacrilegious, better as leftovers than it is when you first cook it. I know. Don't at me. But yes, I love Thanksgiving leftover turkey.
Interesting.
All right. You don't sound like that's really interesting. Or either you weren't listening.
No, I was. But okay. It got me thinking of leftover pizza. Some people like leftover pizza better than the original pizza. And that just struck a chord with me that I like the turkey when it's fresh. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I like it better when it's,
right. But you know. It's okay because they weren't asking you.
This is true. It has not asked Dave anything.
I'm just teasing.
They don't want to hear from Dave.
No, that's not true. I assume that not everybody feels that way, and I eat it both ways. But yes, I cannot get enough of the actual turkey at Thanksgiving. Your top three must-haves on your Thanksgiving table.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.